2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, taking your calls, questions this hour at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 575-8255. And Governor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's great to be with you again.
It's great to have you. And we're in the heat of the legislative session, starting to wind to a close. First of all, just give us your overall perspective of what's happened during the session.
Well, so far, it's actually been a very positive session, and I so appreciate the members of the legislature and their families who sacrificed a tremendous amount during these 45 days. We're very pleased. I know people, it's really easy to hear about a bill that's being proposed or a bill that's being voted on in a committee. I wish more people would take time to understand the entire process. I always tell people to judge the legislature in the session by what actually becomes law, not by what any individual legislator proposes. And too often we paint with a broad brush and don't understand. The media loves to focus on the controversial issues. Many of them don't even go anywhere. Many of them don't even get a hearing. And so I just encourage people, when you look at what is actually moving forward and where we are, I think it's been a really positive session. And my hat's off to legislators and leadership who are working so hard to get us close. We're really 2 weeks from tomorrow will be the last day of the session, and we can't wait for it to get here.
Governor, there have been a couple of bills this session which raise concerns about public access to important information, important documents, and access to legislators. One of those is the rule passed in the Senate chambers, and I understand that you don't vote or veto or have really much to do with this, except I would like you to just give us your opinion. This is the first time that the Senate has said that reporters are off limits on the floor of the chambers. And that's really a significant change from the past. I don't know if you know this, but I covered a legislature for many years, and I always had access to a lawmaker when a bill was being proposed, and I had immediate access. And this really changes that. So just give us your perspective on limiting public access in that way.
Sure. So I appreciate the question, and I want to be clear again. I know you said this, but I want to make it very clear. We are separate branches of government, and so the House and the Senate, they set their own rules for all kinds of things, and the governor doesn't get an opportunity to weigh in on those things, nor should we. That's certainly not our role. The Fourth Estate is really important, and making sure that the media has an opportunity to meet with elected officials is critical. It's critical not just to the people, but it's critical for, I believe, for elected officials as well to have these opportunities. Now, my understanding is that media still would have access. They just have to be accompanied by a staffer or a member. So they have to get permission to go into these places, which usually happens. I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing most of the time, if not a significant majority of the time, that's what happens happens anyway, that you have a conversation, you've reached out, you're meeting with a legislator. And certainly they're still allowed in committee rooms. I know there's some questions about having computers behind the dais. And that just again requires the permission of the committee chair. It is a big issue and it's an important issue. And certainly members of the media care and members of the public should care about that. And I think they're right to, and I think they're right to raise concerns. I think that makes sense. I always tell legislators I would be wary of picking fights with people who buy their ink by the barrel. Although I guess we don't buy a lot of ink anymore. It's all digital now. But making sure that they're improving and enhancing those relationships. So I can't speak to any issues that they've had or the reasons for the change. Again, I'm not involved in any of those discussions. But I do this every week with you or every month with you. I try to be open. I believe it's really important to allow the media to ask questions, even hard questions. Obviously, we're going to get stories that we disagree with. By and large, the vast majority of reporters in this state are professional. They're amazing at what they do. They don't have personal access to grind. They're not Twitter trolls. Most of them do really, really excellent work, and I hope we're doing everything we can to make what we're doing, the lawmaking process, more accessible. In my previous comment, as you asked me about the legislative session and what's happening up there, I said I wished that the public understood the process better. Well, the way the public learns about that process is through you. It's through the media, and so I really want to do everything we can to make that more accessible, and I hope the legislature will continue to allow access. I know they put they made it a permission only, but I sincerely hope they're granting permission when those requests are coming.
Governor, one of the bills that you will have a chance to see if it does pass is one by Senator Bramble, the Garrity bill, and this really limits the public's ability to request information in pretty much police internal procedures, issues that don't reach that level of criminal charges. For example, just to give our listeners some context, this would impact something like the Gabby Petito case, where she had that interaction with her boyfriend down in Moab, Utah, and if this bill was to proceed or to be passed by the Senate, it would mean that people wouldn't have access to what law enforcement actually did and their procedures, how they responded, and if they responded appropriately. What are your feelings on that bill?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So we have over 1,000 bill files that are open. About 500 of those bills will pass, and so I work really hard to be on top of every one of those. I have to be completely honest with you, I have not read the Garrity bill yet, and so I know it's something that our team is watching, and we're always concerned with access to information. I believe that sunlight is the best antiseptic. Making sure that we're very careful. We look, as government right now, we have a trust deficit, and this is true across the world. If you look at institutions, the media has a trust deficit right now. Elected officials and governments have a trust deficit right now. Even businesses and corporations, trust is failing and falling significantly. And so any time that we're removing access or sunlight, I am concerned. So this is one that again, our team will take a look at. If it does make its way through the process, I will look at it very carefully. I believe that Garrity is really serious because testimony is being compelled for internal purposes. This doesn't happen in criminal courts. A person is never compelled to incriminate themselves, but officers can be compelled under Garrity. So post and other internal investigations that are concerned with officers would no longer be able to help them like they would otherwise. I'm not completely sure on all of the issues surrounding this, but we will look closely and hopefully I'll have a better answer for you next time we talk about this one.
Okay, but if it does limit access to important police procedures that are important for people to know about, would you veto that bill?
Well, and that's again where I would have to look more closely at the bill and understand the arguments around it. But as a general rule, unless something's broken, if it's been working okay the way it is now, I don't think, especially law enforcement, we need to make sure that that the trust deficit there is always improving, and more access rather than less is usually the right answer.
All right, let's take your calls now. The number to call to speak with the governor, 801-581-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
And thank you for joining us this noon hour. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. We are taking your calls again, 801-575-8255. And we have Michael on the line, governor from Ogden. Good afternoon, Michael.
Hello. Nice to speak to you, governor. My question is, how do you feel about first-degree felonies with sex charges? Are they never been charged before, but they're doing everything right? How do you feel about it? And is there a bill in the proposed that goes through the processing?
Thank you, Michael, for that question. So, you know, we don't have a bill specifically on felony reform in the legislature right now, but I can speak to the Clean Slate Law that was just implemented. It's actually a bill that passed a few years ago, but we were fortunate to get that implemented, and we had an opportunity to share that with the rest of the country. It was very well received. And look, in Utah, we believe in the rule of law, and we believe that people should be held accountable for their actions, and that is critical to who we are. It's so important that people are responsible. But once people have paid their debt to society, then it's also important that we help them reintegrate back into society. So this bill, the Clean Slate Law, it became just the second in the nation. It really gives those with misdemeanors the opportunity to have their offenses expunged if they've been on good behavior for 5 years or 6 years or 7 years, depending on the level of the misdemeanor. This will change their lives. It will make it easier for them to get jobs, make it easier for them to get housing. You shouldn't have to wear that as a scarlet letter for the rest of your life. These are for nonviolent offenses, and it's not for multiple offenders, but for those that do make a mistake like that one, they serve their time, pay their fines, whatever it is that they're required to do by the court. Then after 5 years, they have an opportunity to take that off of their record. And this is a win. It's something that conservatives agree on. It's something that liberals agree on. It's better for our society, and it helps prevent recidivism. It helps prevent people from going back to jail because they can't get their lives back together because this is hanging over them. And it's something we believe in, second chances here in Utah, and I'm proud that we were able to get that implemented.
Governor, for a moment, let's focus on education and things going through the legislature when it comes to education. First of all, the school voucher bill, how do you feel about that?
Well, I had this conversation this morning with the media, and I want to be very clear. I'm very supportive of vouchers. I'm very supportive of school choice. I believe that school choice is important, that families should have opportunities to decide what type of education is best for their kids. I think it's foundational to who we are, and so I'm very supportive of vouchers. And we do have choice today. We have a charter system that didn't exist August when the voucher bill came up for a vote 14 years ago or whenever that was. And we have incredible charter schools across the state that have given parents more choice than they've ever had in the state of Utah. All of that being said, in order to take money away, public money away, to pay for private schools, which is what vouchers do, or what this Hope Scholarship Bill does, you have to make sure that you're fully funding or appropriately funding the education system in your state. And I just don't believe we're quite there yet. We're getting closer. We're doing better, but we still have a ways to go. And before I can support a voucher bill, we've got to do better. Look, with inflation, what's happening in our state and our country right now, the price of housing. I don't want to live in a state where teachers can't buy a house. The starting salary, average salary for a teacher right now in the state of Utah is about $43,000. The average salary for a teacher in the state of Utah is in the mid 50s, somewhere $53,000, $54,000, somewhere around there, and that's not good enough. I believe we can do better. And so what I would like to see is I truly believe that if we want the best schools and the best teachers, that we need to pay them like it. When we can get to a starting salary approaching $60,000, then I would be all in on vouchers. I would help run the bill. I would do everything I can to get that voucher bill passed because I do believe in it. But I just don't think we're there yet, and this isn't the right time. And on top of that, I'm really worried about our teachers right now. It's been a hard 2 years. You know, we've been very fortunate in this state. We were the first state, one of the first states in the nation, to have kids back in school as the pandemic started. We knew how important it was to have in-person learning, face-to-face education, and we've been a model for the nation for that. Now you have Democratic governors who realize they made a huge mistake in keeping schools closed. And as much as we as politicians would like to pat ourselves on the back for that, I think we do deserve some credit for not keeping schools closed, we didn't do that. We didn't keep schools open. Teachers kept schools open. Teachers are the one that bore the burden of making sure that kids had an opportunity to learn. Teachers were the ones that prevented us having the same education gaps that have happened in other states because of the pandemic. Teachers are the ones that have been helping kids who were out online, who had COVID, make sure that they're not falling behind. Teachers are doing online and in person. They have just been worn down. The grind has become so much. We had a teacher shortage before the pandemic. That's being exacerbated right now as the pressure and the grind has. There's so many of them. They're saying, this is just too much. We're gonna find something else to do. And so we need to make sure we're taking care of our teachers. We need to pay them. We need to pay them well. And so that's where I am right now. We'll continue to work with the sponsors of these bills. Again, I want to be supportive of these bills at the right time. And let's get some more funding in there. Let's pay our teachers more, and then let's do vouchers.
Yeah, one of our texters reminding us of what is tough about this bill, and that is that this scholarship bill was intended to help the underprivileged and people with special needs. And so when you veto that, what are your hopes for those people who need that extra help?
Well, look, the special needs bill passed last year or 2 years ago. That bill is already out there and it's already being funded. So we are doing some of this with special needs individuals. And so I want everyone to have opportunity, and that's important. But you don't do that by making our schools worse and then giving money to underprivileged kids to go to other schools. I would rather spend that money right now to improve those schools where our underprivileged are going, including rural schools. That's where our focus needs to be. And these private schools can do scholarships. They can do fundraising. Many of them do to make opportunities for underprivileged students, and we certainly support that. Again, we have charter schools that are an option for kids and underprivileged kids if they don't feel like they're getting the amount of attention or having the success that they need in public schools. But the answer isn't to make public schools worse. The answer is let's do more. Let's get our public schools where they need to be in underprivileged areas, which is why I'm supporting significant increases for our Title I schools, because that's where we need the help. Let's get those schools better, and then it's a fair choice. Then people can choose if they want to take their money and go somewhere else, but not at at the expense of everyone else that's going to that school.
Right. Now, Governor, the next texter then wants to know why their taxes should go to pay the public schools when their kids aren't attending those schools.
Well, this is a decision that we've made as a society, that public schools are really important, that we need to make sure that that a well-educated society benefits everyone. So if you're, you know, if you're an 80-year-old person who doesn't have any kids in school, you're a young person who just graduated, or you have kids that are going to different schools, that's something we decided as a country long, long ago, and that's not going to change. And I believe it's the right move as well. Look, those kids are going to get out and run companies someday, and they're going to hire kids who went to public schools, and they're going to wish that every person they hired or every colleague they work with was someone who had a great education. So this selfishness that we keep seeing around education, where I get mine but nobody else gets theirs, I just think that's a huge mistake. We're in this together, and I don't care if you live in Park City or in one of our more affluent areas, you should care about the education that's happening in West Valley. You should care about the education that's happening in Sampy County, because ultimately it affects all of us. We need a well-educated society to function as a society, and that happens through making sure that we have well-funded schools, we have the best teachers in the world teaching in those schools, and we're giving every kid an opportunity regardless of their zip code.
Governor, we need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. The number to call when we come back, 801-575-8255. You could text us at 57500.
With even warmer days moving into the weekend.
Get your questions answered by the governor. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. We have Mary, who has been very patiently waiting on the line. And Mary, what is your question for the governor?
Hi, Governor Cox. I'm originally from Salt Lake City, Utah, but my husband and I moved to Saratoga Springs 10 years ago. And in the past 4 years, it has been growing expense very fast. I can't talk. Anyway, but we have been, it feels like the city council and the mayor are like selling their souls to the development companies. And what I want to ask you is we do not have the infrastructure for all of these condominiums, new houses that are coming to our city for like fire, ambulance, and they just keep building and building and building. And I have talked to the city council, and also I texted you at one time or mailed you. But my neighbors and I, we have problems with Edge Homes, with D.R. Horton, with Wadsworth, and they just keep building homes without letting us know about the infrastructure or the impact fees that are going towards our recreational parks. And many of us want to have a dog park there. Now, you know, a lot of them, we don't have backyards. We have to walk. And what can you do as our governor to maybe put a little pressure on slowing down the development of housing and getting in a better infrastructure in Saratoga Springs, Utah?
Well, Mary, thank you for that question. As you know, Utah is the fastest growing state in the nation over the past decade, and certainly cities and towns across the state are feeling that pinch. As someone who served on a city council and as a mayor and as a county commissioner, I'm very familiar with some of those growth issues. We certainly saw some of that in 2005, 2006 before the Great Recession, and then of course we've seen it over the past few years. As some of these, and Saratoga Springs is one area that has certainly grown very, very quickly. Ultimately, those decisions around building rest right now with your local city councils, and those are decisions that they are making. balancing that infrastructure piece. There certainly is some good news in this area, and that is that with the passage of the American Rescue Plan last year, as well as the passage of the infrastructure bill a few months ago, that there are more dollars that will be coming to municipalities throughout the country, helping to alleviate some of these infrastructure problems. Now one of the concerns we had with the congressional infrastructure bill was that the rules as they came out said you could only use this on existing infrastructure, not on new infrastructure. But I got a letter from Senator Mitch McConnell last week explaining that that is nowhere in the bill. Certainly that is not those are not the rules that were given, and that this could be used for new infrastructure. So that will give us an opportunity to work with municipalities to add additional infrastructure where that density is increasing, and make sure that we continue to improve the quality of life there. I can also tell you that at the Department of Transportation, we have hundreds of millions of dollars planned for this area to improve transportation over the next decade. So this isn't your local cities and streets, but these are our state roads that are in and around your community. We've recently expanded Redwood Road to 5 lanes through much of Saratoga Springs, investing tens of millions of dollars. Additionally, we're going to begin construction at the end of next year to connect Mountain View Corridor between Saratoga Springs and Bluffdale in Salt Lake County. So this will provide an additional north-south connection for this area of Utah County and make it easier for residents to get where they need to go. Some roads are under UDOT's jurisdiction, and others are local, as I mentioned. So it sounds like you are getting involved with your community and making sure that your neighbors are trying to work with city council members and mayors to hopefully be responsive. So thank you for that question. You're certainly not alone with those concerns.
Governor, our next texter is wondering when the state is going to take a stand on either staying on daylight savings or daylight saving time or standard time. Why can't we do that? He wants to know.
Well, I took a stand a long time ago, but unfortunately, the governor alone cannot change that. So I like most Utahns, I don't love daylight saving time. I would love to move from that springing forward or falling back. So there are really a couple issues here. And it's that, you know, what a state does can be impacted by what the states around them are doing as well. And so there are kind of two options. One, of course, is to fall back and stay there, which is where we are now. That's where it's lighter earlier but darker later, right? And I will tell you that polling is pretty consistent that most Utahns, including me, do not want that option. They prefer the option where we spring forward and stay sprung, as it were, so that we have the lighter days during the summer months. At the end of, again, not more daylight, but at the end of the day, you have more light, and keep that throughout the winter months. We've certainly lengthened that period over the past few years. So now that there's a shorter time period when we fall back. All of that being said, though, to make that change, we need some help. So states are allowed to fall back and stay there. So the legislature could do that. But to do the other, which is what most legislators and most Utahns want, to spring forward, we actually need congressional approval to do that. There are bills out there. I know Senator Marco Rubio and others have been working on a bill to get that done. It hasn't been able to make its way through Congress yet to give us that option, but we are very hopeful. We have had bills in the past here in the state that would allow us to do that if other states went along with us, surrounding states. If we could all kind of do it together, it would certainly make it happen. But I suspect in the next decade we may see some changes there, and I'm certainly hopeful.
Yeah, that jumping back and forth can be pretty disruptive. Let's see, Jamie is next on the line in Salt Lake City. And Jamie, what is your question for the governor?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my question. I was hoping Governor Cox could share with the listeners your thoughts on the future of women's health and family planning in Utah if Roe versus Wade is dismantled.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Jamie. I appreciate it. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's been fairly well covered and publicized that there is an abortion case, I believe out of Mississippi. I could be wrong on that. I think it is out of Mississippi that is before the Supreme Court now. There's a lot of interest in that case. What will happen? Will they undo that and put it back to the states? We will see. I don't know exactly what will happen. We do have other cases that are also headed to the Supreme Court. The state of Utah has a bill that was passed a couple years ago preventing abortions later than 18 weeks, I believe, of pregnancy. And so that those bills are all on hold pending these decisions. It is no secret that I am pro-life, that I am opposed to abortion, except in cases of rape or incest or the health of the mother, and that those should not be done at past, you know, later stages and past viability. But I'm very much pro-life, and so I anticipate that we will see bills impacting that if Roe v. Wade is overturned. I've always said it should be a state's decision, I'm certainly not alone in that. Supreme Court justices, even those that lean very liberal, have on occasion lamented that it was a mistake to have the Supreme Court make that decision as opposed to the states, and wondered where we might be now. Ruth Bader Ginsburg being the most famous example of that. But I also believe that you have to have this conversation more broadly. For those of us that are pro-life, I believe we have to do more for women and for families and for children, making it easier for family planning, making it so that we have fewer unwanted pregnancies. That's a great way to end abortion is to not have unwanted pregnancies in the first place. We've made some strides in that as a society. We have fewer teenage pregnancies than ever before. That's good news, but we still have a long ways to go. And then how we treat single moms and those who do have kids and are struggling. We have to care as much about them as we do about being pro-life and the abortion rights. So I think that there's much more we can do on that side. And I certainly hope that if there are any changes post Roe v. Wade, that we are putting more resources towards unwanted pregnancies and supporting mothers and children who take those babies and bring those babies into this world.
Governor, we need to take a break. We'll come back with the final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor. We have a number of callers waiting on the line, a number of texts as well. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Visit taxhelput.com and get
your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. Maria Chalaos, along with Governor Spencer Cox. And we have a call coming in from Adam in Orem. Good afternoon, Adam. What is your question?
Hey, good afternoon. Hey, Governor Cox, SB 32 just passed the House and the Senate recently. My wife was a nurse who was attacked about 3.5 months ago at the Utah State Hospital. And what are your plans for that? Is that something you can support? And honestly, sir, I called your office 3 times, 4 times with no answer. And it wasn't until I pushed really hard, city attorneys, sheriff, administration, to get something done, because they're all in this quagmire of, well, they're already mentally ill. Well, not all mentally ill people are violent. And sure as heck, the healthcare providers like my wife don't deserve to be punched and have 3 months off work at 60% pay. So are you planning on signing that? What's your perspective on it?
Adam, and I'm so sorry. I'm familiar with what happened to your wife, and it's just devastating. And you're absolutely right that we have to protect our healthcare workers. And I am very supportive of HB 32 and those enhanced penalties. Too many, and this is happening not just at the state hospitals, happening at hospitals all across the state where our being assaulted, and we have to make sure that doesn't happen. And if it does, that we hold people accountable. So yes, I will absolutely be signing that bill.
All right. Next caller is James in West Jordan. Good afternoon, James.
Hey, thank you for taking my question, Governor. My question is what are you doing about senior citizens? I've been asking our lawmakers to pass a law that says when you retire and go on Social Security and Medicare, that they put your property taxes at whatever it is when you retire, and that they won't go up anymore until you die or you sell the property, then they can reevaluate it. Because a lot of the seniors are living on Social Security alone, and their properties are going up every year, values are going up every year, but yet they keep raising the property taxes, but their income doesn't go up. A lot of those seniors are struggling just to whether they're going to buy groceries, pay for their medical insurance, save their money for the property taxes, or, you know, et cetera. But their income doesn't go up. So the state is saying right now that they have a lot of money left, but nobody mentions helping the seniors in that. So why don't they pass a law that says their property taxes are froze when they retire?
Thank you, James. No. Thank you for the question. And I agree, with extra money, we should be looking at ways to help all Utahns, especially our seniors. This is obviously a very difficult situation to be in. One of the things that we have done is we have a tax cut this year. And part of that tax cut includes, for the second time, a cut in taxes on Social Security. So this is specifically for our seniors. So this is good news. So we'll get more money in the pockets of our seniors. Now, unfortunately, property taxes are mostly governed at the local level, at cities and counties. But there are programs for people who are suffering a hardship. We call that a circuit breaker tax abatement. It's tax relief for low income, for those that are ages 66 and older, and a really great program. And I would encourage you to contact your county clerk, go to your county website, look at those. You can apply for those property tax abatements, and hopefully for those that are in a situation like yours will be able to get that property tax abated. With the additional tax cuts we have this year, we're hoping to get more money in the pockets of our seniors. Thank you so much for that call.
Governor, there are several texters who have been asking about local control versus national control, federal control, I should say. And I think the most pointed question in this area is the latest one we received, asking how you feel about House Bill 60, which prohibits private businesses from requiring proof of vaccination. This texter says they believe at one point you said that you would veto this law. Tell us what your plans are.
Sure. So we're still looking at this one. I know there's been some changes made to it, and I'll tell you what I've told everybody, and I'll tell this texter, and that is that I'm done with COVID bills. I think we should all be done with COVID bills. If we really want to show Utah that we're moving forward, the best way to do that is to just be done with all the bills, all of them. That being said, the sponsor of the bill, Walt Brooks, is absolutely right, and that is that we should be done with the vaccine requirements. As cases continue to plummet, as hospitalizations continue to plummet, most Americans and a significant majority of Utahns are ready to go back to normal. And there are very few businesses that are doing this right now. And my encouragement to businesses is now's the time. There was a time before Omicron when vaccinated people were much less likely to get COVID and to spread COVID. With Omicron, that's not true at all. And so you could have somebody who is fully vaccinated who can get into one of these venues or into one of these businesses and actually have COVID and spread COVID. We have documented cases of this happening. And so we are asking businesses to now move back and move forward. We're asking the legislature to move forward. And that's exactly what's happening. The Utah Jazz announced that they would be suspending their vaccination requirement effective February 25th. I think you'll see a lot more of those. I hate mandates. I don't like the federal government coming in and telling businesses what they have to do. We have an exception already. We passed this. I signed it into law. An exception for employees. They can be exempted from those vaccine requirements. And so I don't think we should be mandating businesses telling them what to do. But if I'm being intellectually honest, then that means I don't like us coming in and telling them they can't do this as well. That's a mandate. This is a mandate against mandates. And I don't like that either. I would rather the market take care of that, and the market is taking care of that. And I suspect over the next couple of weeks, all of those, and there aren't very many, the few that are left will go away as well.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that would even pass constitutional muster. If you can't mandate a vaccine from businesses, can you ban them from, you know, mandating
right. vaccines? Right, that's the question. We filed suit against the federal government to stop those mandates, and we've been successful, and that's the right thing to do. But the question is now, could that turn around and prevent us from doing that same thing in reverse, right? And there are some arguments for that, obviously.
Governor, we have just a couple of minutes left. The next person says there's been a lot of push for clean or renewable energy in the country. What are your thoughts on nuclear energy as a clean energy source?
Look, if you care about climate, you care about the environment, you care about energy, all of these things, you have to be supportive of nuclear. And I am, for sure. It is important to have in our portfolio as a way to produce energy that is with very low emissions, no emissions, cheaper. It's just as important as talking about solar and wind and these other resources. And as I went back to Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago, was able to meet with the president, vice president, as well as cabinet members that are working on these issues. Those are the conversations that we had, not just around nuclear, but also, again, if you want to have solar and you want to have clean, renewable energy vehicles, if you want electric vehicles, we also have to start producing those things here. And the only way to do that is through mining the critical minerals. And 28 of those 35 critical minerals are located right here in the state of Utah. We can't keep saying, you know, we care about the environment, but we're going to let China and Africa mine all of this stuff where they have no environmental controls. And in the case of China, they don't like us. It's making harder for us. When we can do that right here. So our push with the administration, and the Secretary of Energy agrees with this, by the way, is that we have to do more mining and manufacturing here in the United States. And Utah is the perfect place for that to happen. And that's what we can do to have more electric vehicles, to reduce emissions and clean up our air and help with climate.
Governor, we appreciate your time. Thank you for spending this time with us every month on Let Me Speak to the Governor.
Thank you, Maria. It's great to be with you.
All right, and we'll see you next month.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.